Welcome to a Catalyst for Change podcast, where we are a catalyst to inspire compassion among people, promote collaboration with leaders, and build capacity for programming.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Catalyst for Change show. I'm thrilled to be with you today. My name is Lisa Rowe, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as the CEO for an amazing organization called Support After Abortion. Support After Abortion exists to end the demand for abortion by helping to heal men and women who've been impacted by abortion. We do that through collaboration, through capacity building, and ultimately helping our culture grow more compassionate as they see abortion and those who've been wounded. We host this show every week in order to bring about conversations with some of the leaders in our industry and our movement. And today I get to introduce you to Alan Parker. He's the president of Justice Foundation, and help me welcome him to the show today. Hi, Alan.
Hi, it's great to be with you, Lisa.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us today, Alan. You and I have had so many conversations leading up to this interview, and I just hope to do it justice because you are an amazing man who has served the better part of the last maybe more than 20 years of your life in the movement, the pro-life movement. In a lot of ways, you've been innovative with bringing the testimonies of those who have been hurt by abortion forward. Can you share with us a little bit about how you got into this movement and what you're doing in it now?
Yeah. One of the major changes in my life was going to my first March for Life in Washington, D.C. in the year 2000. So that tells you how far back I started being directly heavily involved in the pro-life movement. Before that, I was pro-life. I did some work in the political and governmental area. I would vote for pro-life candidates and things like that, which is very important. But I went to my first March for Life, and actually a little bit before that, women who had been injured by abortions, mostly physically, began to come to us in the years between 1998 and 2000, seeking assistance from the damages they suffered as a result of abortion. And two young female lawyers came to us and said, we want to do something about the pro-life issue. We want to do something. And I remember saying, well, you don't do pro-life work unless you're called to it. That you two seem to be called to it, so you can do it under our umbrella at the Justice Foundation. And led by those two young women, we formed a Women's Health Protection Task Force. And we began to actually work for abortion facility regulations, because that's about all you could do at that time, to try to regulate it, at least for the safety. And some people say, well, how can you want that? We don't want the baby to be killed. We want to ban abortion, but we don't want the woman to be killed either. And so we want abortion to be safe and the least damage to the woman, but we're working to try to stop all abortions, and all abortions, I believe, are damaging to women. So we really, as we talk about it today, the Justice Foundation is one organization with three major projects, and the first one sort of grew out of this. And then the March for Life, we met Norma McCorvey at that March for Life. And the young female lawyer said, you ought to meet her and meet a lawyer named Harold Cassidy, who was already working to overturn abortion at that time. And he wanted us to represent Norma in a friend of the court brief at the Supreme Court, in a case called Donna Santa Marie, a 16-year-old girl who'd been forced to have an abortion against her will, which is one of the ways that abortion hurts women. So anyway, we coming back through the airport in Dallas after that trip, it just came to me, wow, Norma, who was the Roe of Roe v. Wade, and Sandra, meaning Sandra Cano, who was the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, the companion case to Roe v. Wade, both of them could file their own motions to set aside Roe and Doe. As a party to the original case, they could do something you and I couldn't do. They could actually ask themselves, please reverse our case on the grounds it's no longer just. So that idea came to me. And at that point, and you're sort of the new part of the movement, I'll just go back a little bit. At that point, pretty much the major argument the pro-life movement was making was abortion, it's a baby, you're killing a baby. And that's an important argument. It's very true, but it had not been enough to convince a majority of America or the court to stop it. And so, excuse me, what hit me that weekend was the other argument is that they make is abortion is good for women. And the only people who could really disprove that are women. And I believe in a moral law that the law is written on the heart, thou shalt not murder. That's why, fortunately, most people don't murder. And there is a conscience, I believe, that's put into us. And so I didn't really know any women who'd had abortions. At least I thought at the time, I didn't know anybody. But when I started talking about this in my own Sunday school class, 3 out of 20 people in the class were women who came up later and said, we'll give you our testimonies, because they had been devastated by abortion, but they didn't tell anybody in the church about it. And not that they have to go around telling it, there was no outlet for them to tell it. And so we began to collect the testimonies of women. And that was our first project called Operation Outcry. There was a little bit of a predecessor group called Windjured Women Exploited by Abortion, a little group called WEBA. And then there was some, I'm not saying we were absolutely the first, there was Rachel's Vineyard had started. And around the same time, Silent No More Awareness Campaign kind of grew up. And then we met each other kind of along the way. But I would say we were kind of called into the movement around the same time. And so we now have over 4,600 legally admissible testimonies of women hurt by abortion. And Operation Outcry is one of the things that we do. And we protect the women's confidentiality. But the truth that abortion is not good for women is mostly known by the women who have abortions. Otherwise, people believe the lies of the media, the lies of Planned Parenthood. Oh, it's safe. It's easier than childbirth. Just 10 minutes, you'll never have to think about it again. I remember one of the women, Operation Outcry, saying, that's what they told me. And she said, then that's a lie. I've never stopped thinking about the child that I killed. So it is important, and we can give those testimonies to the court through our friend of the court, Reese. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We give legal services at no charge because other people donate to us to do our work. So we help the women present their testimonies to courts and legislatures banning or restricting abortion. And I believe we eventually did take that Norma and Sandra's cases to the Supreme Court. The court said, we don't want to hear it at this time. They did not rule against us. They just denied the request to be heard. And they do that most of the time. The Supreme Court gets about 8,000 to 9,000 applications or appeals for writs of certiorari. And they take about 80 or 90 cases a year. So your chances are 99%. If you appeal to the Supreme Court, you'll get cert denied. We don't take your case. And that's so frequent that that means, that doesn't mean we ruled against you on the merits. It's not a binding precedent or decision that other courts have to follow. Just we're not hearing you. But I do believe when Roe is overturned, and I believe it will be in my lifetime, maybe certainly yours, that the court will write it in either a footnote or the main part of the decision. By the way, the two women whose cases we're reversing today, the Roe of Roe v. Wade and the Doe of Doe v. Bolton, Norma and Sandra, both previously came to this court and asked us to reverse their cases. Today, we're joining them in recognizing the justice of that request. So that was our first thing. And then I believe it showed the power of the women's testimonies. In 2007, the Supreme Court actually upheld the ban on partial birth abortion when they had refused to let the states ban abortion in 2000. 38 states had banned partial birth abortion, horribly gruesome method, late term abortion. Part of the baby is outside the mother's room. A cannula is stuck in the skull and the brains are sucked out of a living baby. And yet, because the head was still inside, we call that not a born child. But in 2007, Justice O'Connor had been removed from the court by her own voluntary action because of a severe illness of her husband. And another judge got on the court, and the court changed its mind. And Justice Kennedy wrote an opinion, and he cited the women's testimonies. This is why what Support After Abortion does to heal women is so critical. We've always collaborated with abortion recovery groups, and after women are healed, they can give a testimony. Or if they hear about us and give the testimony first, we always refer them to Full Healing. Because many women explain they go into a cycle of abortions because they feel so terrible. They feel like a murderer. They let women and men abuse them, mostly men abusing women, drug abuse, sexual promiscuity, sexual dysfunction, all sorts of things that you wouldn't think about happen from an abortion that the women have told us about. So we refer to abortion recovery, but the women's testimony is very, very, very powerful. We know it changed the court's mind because the court said this, and this is Gonzalez v. Carr, some women come to regret aborting the infant life they once created and sustained. See page 22 to 23 of Cano et al.'s brief. Et al. Is Latin for "and others." It was 180 women hurt by abortion. So we know. And now what was on page 22 and 23? I think it was 22 to 24. It was the testimony, line after line after excerpts of the women's testimony, how abortion hurt them. And it was the first time the court ever called it an infant life because of the testimony of the mothers who had taken the life of their own child. And then in the Louisiana hospital admitting cases, Justice Alito and Justice Gorsuch both refer to the women's testimonies as to what happens in reality in an abortion facility, as opposed to the lie of the abortion industry and Planned Parenthood. So that's very, very powerful. That was the first thing that we did. Yes.
Wow. That's incredible. And Alan, what you just said that I want our listeners to hear is that only 20 years ago, when you walked into the pro-life movement, it was the focus on saving that baby's life. And so what you're sharing with us is two decades of how we've really transformed the pro-life movement, you being one of the major leaders and saying, wait a second, yes, the baby is very important and we want to fight for that life, but we have also got to fight for the woman who experienced that abortion. And now we're going to talk about men. And so we're moving into these new places to help show that there's an actual huge system impacted by abortion. And I love that you drew that out today because, you know, Alan, when I'm walking into places, people don't understand that we're operating in a place of helping heal people for two reasons. We really want to innately heal their and bring them to freedom. That's what the Lord calls us to, right? To walk in purpose with Him. And we can't do that when we've got all this junk. But there's another piece that would motivate our pro-life audience right now, and that is when people find healing, what happens?
Well, I find that they become incredibly productive members of the church and the body of Christ, because as Jesus said, those who have loved much, those who have been forgiven much, love much, and they become the freedom, the pain is gone. They can begin to talk about it. They become incredible witnesses against the abortion industry. And they become very active in their churches. Many of them start ministries of healing to other women. It's almost like because the psychological industry doesn't want to admit it, the women have had to do, like many women's groups have, sort of begin to just talk among themselves. They find healing. The first healing programs were really just Bible studies on forgiveness and healing. And they not only have to receive the forgiveness of the Lord, they have to give forgiveness to those who hurt them in the abortion process. And that's a hard thing to do, but there's a lot of scriptures and the grace of the Holy Spirit allows you to do that. And, you know, after we won some major court victories, people said, that's a brilliant idea. And I said, it is a brilliant idea. Because it was God's idea. I mean, it came to me in prayer And I prayed for 30 days whether or not to do it and really said, is this really you, God? And I just got confirmation after confirmation that the Lord wanted us to do this. And so that actually brought us also to our second ministry that once I started getting testimonies of women who had abortions, I found out that shockingly, once you make abortion legal, it allows other people to force women to have an abortion to solve their problem. And let me give you the three main types and you'll understand what I'm saying. Number one is adult parents forcing a minor to have an abortion to solve the family's problem. And then the second is a man forcing a woman to abort his child because he doesn't want to be a father. She may be very happy that they're having a baby. He says, no way, you're getting an abortion. And they will actually force or coerce the woman into having an abortion. And the third is human trafficking or pimping, prostitution, where they don't want her out of business. So it's total coercion. So all three of those things are illegal already. We're working to, in the long run, to stop all abortions for everybody. And in the short term, a involuntary forced abortion is already illegal. So we have a lot of tools in our Center Against Forced Abortion, which is our second ministry or project talking about today, all under the Justice Foundation umbrella, that anyone can stop a forced abortion and people can get the information on our website. But the third thing that I is most excited about combines everything, and it's the moral outcry to end abortion in America and get the Supreme Court to reverse its own Supreme Court decisions. And it's based on a little book called The Law of Judicial Precedent. And this is a kind of an amazing, unusual thing. This book came out in 2016. Probably no one can read the list of judges who co-wrote it, but two of them, people's names would recognize, Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch, who were Court of Appeals judges when they wrote this, are now on the Supreme Court. And this book tells you how to overturn a decision of the Supreme Court. That's what precedent means. Do you follow a decision or you set aside? And I want to give hope to people. The Supreme Court has overturned over 200 of its own prior decisions. And just last year, they overturned a 1972 decision of the Supreme Court that dealt with the right to unanimous juries. And Roe is a year old, is only 1 year younger than that decision. Actually, it was a 73. So the fact that Roe is 58 years old, that means nothing. The age is not relevant. That question is it just? Does it hurt people? Have people come to rely upon it? And the beautiful thing, in addition to now we know that abortion is a crime against humanity, that is severe criticism, which is one of the reasons for reversing a Supreme Court decision, because new science shows it's taking the life of the human being. And it's just as bad as slavery or segregation, which were Supreme Court decisions. And then in Brown v. Board of Education, they reversed a 58-year-old precedent of the Supreme Court, which had allowed segregation in America. And we know now abortion hurts women. And we also have a new thing under the law called the Safe Haven Law. Any woman can relinquish her child within a set period of time to the proper state authorities after birth, and she can be free of all child care. She can go to college, she can do work, she can dance, she can do whatever she wants. And it's free, unlike abortion. And it doesn't have the killing of a human being associated with it, doesn't have abortion trauma like you all so successfully deal with. But after many decades of trauma in people's lives, and you're successful, but it's a deep wound. And then the last thing, what will happen to those children? There's a lot of pain, which I think you all deal with sometimes too, of miscarriage and infertility. 6 million women a year in America cannot have a child after a year of trying. And about 2 million of those a year, after a few years of trying, say, I would adopt a baby. So we have 2 million women a year waiting to adopt newborn children. So the moral outcry is the love, love, love solution. Don't kill the baby. Don't hurt yourself. Give us the baby and we'll give the child to the loving homes waiting to adopt newborn children. So that's the loving, perfect solution, I believe. And what we have to do is get enough signatures to that it's severe criticism. And we already have over 350,000, and our goal is 1 million this year and 3 million, say, by the end of next year or the year after that, when the case gets to the Supreme Court.
Wow. And we know easily there's that many people impacted by abortion, but that need to know this exists. Terry Baxter from H3 Helpline, she shared with me, and I've used it ever since. She said, second to an ultrasound is a testimony of the impact of abortion, a personal testimony. And you get that because when somebody can share their journey, you know, what if it's a grandma sharing her journey with the mother or the mother with the granddaughter? Those are really impactful. When you can talk about how those damaging choices impacted you, and you really are getting it. Now, what will these signatures do, Alan? How will that help to overturn Roe versus Wade?
Well, we as a legal foundation represent Melinda Tebow, who's the founder of the Moral Outcry petition. And we file briefs on her behalf in every abortion case at the Supreme Court level that could reverse Roe v. Wade. And in those briefs, we are putting the names, but no other contact data, of every signer of the Moral Outcry petition. And if you want to make a persuasive argument, that is a substantial change for society. Sometimes it takes you time to persuade people. You have to repeat the argument sometimes and showing more pressure. Oh, other people think this is a good idea. This is partly what public interest litigation does. You're not only convincing the court, you're convincing the society. And under the law of precedent, the court does pay attention to public opinion. In many areas of the law, you don't want the judges swayed by public opinion. Their job is to follow the law no matter what. Don't have partiality to the rich or the poor. Follow the law. But when they're deciding whether they're to reverse their own decision, they're making the decision. They don't have to do it. And obviously, Roe is a deep tragedy. And now there's no reason to kill the child to give woman freedom from a child. And you say, who can it hurt? I remember one of the Kardashians, and I believe it was Kourtney. I don't follow them tremendously. So it was one of the Kardashians who got pregnant. And she said she kept her baby because she went online and read so many stories of women who were hurt by abortion. And she was rich. She was in no desperate circumstance. She just didn't want a baby. But she kept that baby. And I believe that some of the women in Hollywood who are adopting lots of children, and this is speculation on my part, I think many of them may have had abortions. And one of the reactions is to try to replace the baby that you adopted. But if you don't really get the healing, another baby doesn't replace or get over the guilt and the other trauma associated with killing a child. It could maybe a temporary fix. They call it the atonement baby or something like that, but it's not the true way to get healing. And I'm so grateful that support after abortion does not support abortion. It supports women after they've had an abortion. And, you know, we would all like to see a society that advances towards a more humane and just society. And anyone can sign the Moral Outcry at themoraloutcry.com. That's the pure website dedicated just to that. But you can go to thejusticefoundation.org, thejusticefoundation.org, which means we're a nonprofit, and you can get all the information that we've talked about today. You can sign the Moral Outcry petition. And then you can, if you're a woman who's had an abortion You can give us your story through Operation Outcry, which is also on that website. And you tell us how to protect your identity. If you've gone through healing and you're publicly speaking about it and everyone in your family knows you've had an abortion, you may say, use my full name. But if you haven't told other people about it, we recommend initials or first name only. If you'd like to personalize a bit, like Sally or something, there's a million Sallys in America, you know, you wouldn't invade your privacy. And then we'll follow your instructions when we give the testimonies to the court. We're working on a brief right now in which we're presenting the testimonies of women who had abortions when they were minors, because the court is dealing with a parental notification statute in Indiana. Right now, the court thinks abortion is good for women. So why shouldn't teenagers get abortion? And why should their parents stop them from getting something that's good for them because the parents are old-fashioned or something? Well, these are several hundred. I think we have about 475 legally admissible written testimonies of who had abortions when they were a teenager or minor under the age of 18. And yet they suffered decades of devastation. Why should we let my teenagers make that life-changing decision when they can't even decide to vote until they're 18 or something? And, you know, even if you make the wrong vote, it's not going to scar you forever, you know, whereas abortion can, as you know. But there is healing and forgiveness. I believe in Jesus Christ and his power to forgive. And there are many ministries today and therapists who are beginning to deal with it.
Absolutely. And you did such a good job directing our audience to what it is that we hope that you will do if you have experienced abortion and want to participate, which we strongly would encourage you to do so. Head on over to the Moral Outcry website and make sure to connect there. And like Alan said, you can remain anonymous or you can share. And so we're just really grateful, Alan, that you would be a part of our work and a part of the legacy of the pro-life movement, Alan. I'm just so grateful that we get to stand on the shoulders of really courageous people like you. And so thank you for joining us today. If you are interested, as Alan mentioned, head on over to the Justice Foundation or the Moral Outcry web pages. You can also join us at Support After Abortion to hear Alan's 45-minute conversation about this topic. And he goes into a little bit more detail for you at supportafterabortion.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us today. If you or someone you know has been impacted by abortion, you are not alone. Contact us today at supportafterabortion.com. If you were inspired by today's message, we welcome you to join the conversation by following us on Facebook or Instagram.